Should we pose that we're ready for questions?
Well,
we don't
come from.
I get it from this angle. All right, it's going to be lecture. Lecture number 6, an Old Testament survey. Lecture number 6, and we're going to try to cover Numbers and Deuteronomy, and we'll be finished with the law, the first 5 books. The books of Moses, the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Bible. Numbers was written by Moses between 1440 and 1405 B.C. And it's called Numbers. This is going to be a tough one on the test. It's called Numbers because Israel is numbered twice in the wilderness during this time. There's a census taken and they're counted twice. Why are they counted twice? The first time because they're getting counted to see how many fighting men they had to get ready to take the promised land. Then they lost their faith and decided they didn't want to mess with the giants of the promised land. God made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years until they died out. And then the next generation had to be counted, numbered, and so it was a second numbering. And then eventually they went in. Now Deuteronomy brings up the last speeches of Moses right before they entered into the promised land. An outline of the book of Numbers. Three main sections. Erase this board. Extra credit between lectures. You can just erase my board here. And the Lord knows you guys need extra credit. So the book of Numbers. Okay, number 1 is God directs Israel. God directs and leads Israel. Chapters 1 to 10. The second part is Israel's disbelief, their failure to enter into the promised land. That's chapters 11 to 14. And then the third part, the remainder of the book, God disciplines Israel for disbelieving him and not deciding not to enter the promised land, and they wander in the wilderness until that generation dies out, and there has to be a second census or the second numbering of Israel, and that's chapters 15 to 36. That's our outline of the book of Numbers. And God directs Israel the first 10 chapters. Israel is moving toward the promised land. So here on our map, remember they came out of Egypt through the 10 plagues and the parting of the Red Sea. They went through the wilderness. And then they march over to Kadesh Barnea. march over to Kadesh Barnea, and they were going to enter from here into the land of Canaan, into the promised land, but that's when they lost their faith. But they're moving towards the promised land in these first 10 chapters. So God is directing them. Israel is numbered in chapter 1, and the census taken shows that there were over 600,000 men. These are probably fighting men, which gives you probably over 2 million people all told. This is not long after they came out of Egypt. So they had about 2 million people in Egypt. Chapter 2 of the book of Numbers, the camp is arranged for the march. On the east side, you have Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. Those three tribes are on the east side. Okay? On the south, you have Reuben, Simeon and Gad. In the center, you had the Levites. On the west side, you had Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. And on the north side, you had Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. So there was an organized way that it was all set up. And the different sides were made by the different tribes. Ephraim and Manasseh were two sons of Joseph. Joseph was given a double portion. So two tribes came from him. So you had 13 tribes, but the Levites weren't going to receive any land since you needed priests in each of the tribes. And the Levites were in the center, and they were surrounded by three tribes in the front, three tribes on each on one side, three tribes on the other side, and three tribes from the rear.
So in Revelation, where there's only 12 tribes to get blessing with Dan, it's omitted from that?
Yeah, there's different. I believe it's Dan there. There's different. Every time the 12 tribes are mentioned, somebody's omitted. And in some areas, just the Levites are just omitted because they didn't have land. Other times, if somebody's omitted because of some kind of judgment. So apparently, in the last days, I think it's Dan, and I think it was because of idolatry. But one of them is omitted, and they didn't get real idolatrous at one time in their history. Chapters 3 to 8 of Leviticus talk about the fact that the Levites were chosen for holy service. Originally, it was supposed to be all Israel was supposed to be God's kingdom of priests. But then it was just the firstborn son, you know, because it was basically Israel was messed up, just like the churches today were messed up. We do our own thing. So that's just the firstborn son. And that still wasn't doing it. So then it was just one tribe, the tribe of the Levites. And it was kind of a slap in the face of Israel, showing that they were just weren't being that kind of kingdom of priests that they should have been. So the Levites are chosen for holy service. Chapters 3 to 8. Talk about the priesthood. The first Passover is celebrated in chapter 9. Remember, the Passover had occurred in Egypt. The Jews celebrated it and all. It had occurred. But then, this is the first time it's celebrated out here in the wilderness. And then in chapter 10, the journey towards the promised land begins, and they go to Kadesh Barnea, and they're ready to go on into the promised land, the land of Canaan. Okay? So, God is directing Israel. Everything is going as scheduled right now. They celebrate that first Passover. They're journeying towards the promised land. Now they're getting ready to take the promised land. Chapter 11 of the book of Numbers. People complain, the Israelites complain about their hardships. They begin to long for some of the meat that they used to eat in Egypt. They're getting tired of the manna, the wafers that God is sending them. God sent them then quail, small birds for them to eat. So they got a little bit of meat there. This is Numbers 11. The wind blows these quails, these small birds to them. But the Israelites are complaining. In chapter 12, Miriam, Moses' sister, and Aaron, Moses' brother, even they complain against Moses. Look at chapter 12 of the book of Numbers, verse 1. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, an African woman that he married, for he had married a Cushite woman. So apparently his other wife died, and he married an African lady, and they started speaking against him. I don't know, maybe they were saying you shouldn't be marrying a black lady. Maybe that was the case, I don't know. But they did not like the fact that he married a Cushite woman. Verse 10 of Numbers chapter 12. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous. So God basically tells him, look, Moses is my leader, you better obey your brother, and stop giving him a hard time. If you don't like the fact that he married a black lady, you think white is the way it should be, I'll make you white, Miriam. And he gives her leprosy, and now she's white as snow. And that's a tough way to learn a lesson. Verse 15. So Miriam was shut up outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on until Miriam was received again. So God healed her from it, but she, for 7 days, she had to wait outside the camp and be healed. And after the healing of a leper, you got to keep them out of the camp, I believe, 7 days to make sure that they were healed. And so she temporarily got leprosy. It was, I guess, it was God's way, if I interpret it properly, to tell them to stop picking on Moses just because he married a leper. In the Old Testament, the Jews were commanded not to marry non-Jews. But that meant non-Jews, non-Israelites, religiously, not non-Israelites as a family, as a nation. Where it was applied as a nation was when they went into the land of Canaan. These people were nothing but a bunch of occultists into demonism and false religion. So God said, hey, don't intermarry with them because then you'll start worshiping their gods. Okay? But if somebody became an Israelite, worshiped the God of Israel, you could marry him. Even Rahab the harlot was an exception of the Canaanites. Later on, Ruth, both Rahab the harlot and Ruth are in Jesus' line. Ruth was a non-Jew from Moab. He had a question?
Yeah, you consider these borders to walk across the land?
Yeah, I would believe so. I would believe so. I don't think...
And Rahab the harlot, too, by faith?
Yeah, and definitely Rahab the harlot. She said the reason why she was going to lie for the spies, the Israelite spies, and protect them, is because we've heard, she said, we've heard the stories of your God, how he parted the Red Sea, how he did mighty work. And basically, she had that healthy fear of the Lord that is the beginning of spiritual knowledge. And so, yeah, she believed in the God of Israel. She had heard enough of the God of Israel to know that he was the true God and he was going to literally kick some butt in the Promised Land and whoop the tar of false gods and Canaanites. So, and Rahab the harlot was a harlot, but once she turned to the God of Israel, all the evidence seems to indicate that she ceased to be a harlot, and from her line eventually came the Messiah. So the people are complaining against their hardship in chapter 11, chapter 12, Miriam and Aaron complain against Moses. Then the Jews at Kadesh Barnea, they send some spies into the Promised Land. So look at Exodus chapter 13. And verses 1 and 2, very key chapter. Numbers chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Very observant, sir. Very observant. Glad to appoint to your next task. Really give you a lot of confidence. Numbers 13, 1 and 2. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, everyone a leader among them. So send out 12 spies, 12 guys from the 12 different tribes. But they come back with a bad report. Look at verses 25 to 33 of Numbers chapter 13. When they return from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceed to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh, and they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told them and said, we went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. So they're saying, hey, it is a land of blessing, just like God told us. However, they said this in verse 28, nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Now, Anak are descendants of the Nephilim. They're not the Nephilim before the flood, but the name of the giants that were before the flood, the demonic offspring, that name carried over to giants after the flood. And so the Anakites, or the Anakim, they were descendants of the earliest giants from about the time of Noah and his sons, and all the earliest giants were called Nephilim, then the Anakim. I've done some studies on the giants, real interesting, but then some of the studies settled in, what was it, Gath, in the land of the Philistines, and that's where Goliath was from, and he was a descendant of the Anakim, who were the descendants of the Nephilim. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. Then Caleb, now only two spies brought back a good report and didn't die out. One was Caleb and the other was Joshua. The other 10 spies said, forget it. The giants in the land, we've got no chance of winning. So Caleb and Joshua brought back a good report. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us. So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. Tremendous violence there. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. The Nephilim, just Nephilim means fallen ones. It is probably the fallen angels, the demons that cohabited with women. But later on, because they were so gigantic, Nephilim became the name for giants. And so when Nephilim was translated into the Greek Septuagint, they used the word gigantus. It was either the Greek or the Latin for later on, for when they translated the Latin Vulgate. But whatever the case, because of their size, the giants after the flood, the name was carried over to them of the Nephilim. Sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. And so the bad report is there are giants in the land. Now, key here is, sometimes our problems are bigger than us. Sometimes we can't handle our problems because they're so big. But remember, no matter how big your problems are, God is bigger than your problems. Joshua and Caleb were right. Yeah, these guys are huge, but God promised us he's going to give us victory. Now, let me tell you about some of these giants. Look at overhangs. When you drive under overhangs, always look at what the height is that they get. When you go through Burger King, drive-through, whatever, when one of them says like 9'6" or 9'9", look how high it is. That's how tall Goliath was. And you tell me that King David didn't have courage. But then when you see ones that are like 12'5" or 12 foot high, there was a guy, King Og of Bashan, that Moses and the Israelites wiped out, defeated his people. Well, they bragged about his bed being, he was part of the Rephidim, another group of giants, and his bed was 13.5 feet long, and they mentioned it. Now, why did they mention it? They're not just bragging about what a big bed he had. He was of a race of giants, and they're probably bragging because that's some indication of how big he was. Now, I don't know if a guy who's got a bed 13.5 feet tall, that means that he's 11.5 or 12 feet tall or whatever. But King Og of Bashan was probably a lot bigger than Goliath. So, look at the size of that. That's the kind of faith the Israelites of old had. Here's one of David's mighty men killed a 7.5 foot tall Egyptian. He took the spear away from the guy, one of David's mighty men, and killed the guy with his own spear. So the Israelites were men of faith, great warriors, and were giant killers. Let's see where we left over. The people refused. The spies came back with a bad report of Kadesh Barnea, chapter 13. So chapter 14, the people refused to enter the promised land. And so God condemns them to wander in the wilderness for a period of 40 years. And so God directed Israel the first 10 chapters, but because of Israel's disbelief, they refused to enter the promised land. And so now God disciplines Israel, chapters 15 to 36. They
are not allowed to enter the promised land. That generation has to die out, except for Joshua and Caleb. And the Israelites, the next generation, will enter the promised land, and God will give them the victory. So chapters 15 and 36 of Numbers, God disciplines Israel. In chapter 16, a guy named Korah leads a rebellion, the rebellion of Korah, against Moses, and God punishes him. The earth swallows up those who rebelled against Moses. In chapter 17, God causes Aaron's rod to bud, and this proves, this is God's way of proving that Aaron is his chosen high priest. Chapter 20, verses 1 to 12 of Numbers. You don't have time to read it, but Moses sins. God tells Moses to speak to the rock and water will come out to quench the thirst of the people. But by this time, Moses has had it up to here with the people and they're complaining. Moses strikes the rock real hard twice and yells at the rock. And the water comes out, but God says, because you blew your cool. You know, by this time, Moses, he had a bad temper and killed the guy. But 40 years later, God had made him, according to Jesus, the meekest and the humblest and the mildest man who ever lived. Yet, now Moses, in his area of strength, gets weak, blows his top. God says, because you blew your top like that, because you sinned there, I will not allow you to enter the promised land. And Moses eventually sees the promised land from the top of a mountain. But Aaron dies also in chapter 20. He dies at that point. And so the first high priest of Israel is dead at that point. Chapter 21, there are many fiery serpents in the desert that were biting the people, poisonous snakes, and the people were dying. So God told Moses, make a bronze standard, bronze staff, and make a bronze snake and put the serpent, bronze serpent on it. And whenever a person gets bit, tell them to look at the bronze standard with the serpent on it, and that person will be healed. So if the people look, they were healed. Why? Because it was a look of faith. God promised, I'll heal everyone who looks at it. So if they had faith in God, they would look at that, and God would heal them. Now, in John chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, we don't have time to turn there, but Jesus tells Nicodemus that the Son of Man must be lifted up from the earth so that all who look to him will be saved, all who trust in him will be saved, just as all those in the wilderness who looked up at the bronze serpent on the standard were healed. And that this is what he's talking about, Numbers chapter 21. Now, the problem is, how can that be symbolic of Christ on the cross when it was a serpent? And the serpent is usually symbolic of Satan. Well, the serpent is also symbolic of sin, the results of Satan. And what did Jesus become on the cross for us? He became our sin on the cross. And God punished Jesus in our place. By the way, I don't even know if we'll cover it later on, but later on, one of the kings of I don't know if it was Israel or Judah. I think it was one of the kings of Judah. Later on, he destroys. It might have been Hezekiah. One of the kings, though, destroys this. The bronze serpent, they still had it. But by that point, the Israelites were into idolatry and they were actually worshiping it. And so he figured it was time to just destroy it rather than allow it to be a stumbling block to the people. Chapters 22 to 24, Balak, the king of Moab. Moab is out here just to the east of the land of Canaan and down by the southern portion by the Dead Sea. Balak, the king of Moab, the Israelites were pretty big and he didn't want them to defeat him. So he hires a false prophet named Balaam and he tells Balaam to curse Israel. But instead, every time Balaam tries to curse Israel, God forces him to make a prophecy that blesses Israel. Even a prophecy that a star would come that would announce the coming of the Jewish Messiah. And so every time he tries to curse Israel, God forces him to bless Israel. But what Balaam did do in chapter 25 He then told Balak, the king of Moab, I couldn't curse these people, but what you can do is get them interested in the Moabite woman, and then the Israelites will take them as extra wives, and then they'll start worshiping their false gods. And that's exactly what happened in Numbers chapter 25, verses 1 to 5. The Israelites marry Moabite woman and worship their false gods, and God brings judgment upon the Israelites for that as well. Chapter 26, the new generation comes about, so the new generation is numbered, and they also have over 600,000 men, and so probably over 2 million people. In chapter 27 of Numbers, Joshua is chosen to succeed Moses. Chapter 31, Israel defeats the Midianites. Chapter 32, Reuben, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh said, you know, we like the land over here to the east of the land, to the east of the Jordan River. And so they're given tribes on that side, okay? They're given land on that side so long as they agreed to fight with Joshua and the Israelites when they take the promised land, and they agree to do so. Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh choose land east of the Jordan, chapter 32. Chapter 34, instructions are given for dividing the promised land once it's taken. And in chapter 35, the cities of refuge are given. Those who accidentally killed someone could flee to these cities of refuge to get a fair trial, so they would not be stoned to death. But that's the book of Numbers. Now the fifth book, the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy means the second giving of the law. The second giving of the law. What it is the law is restated for the second generation of Israelites. So Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law. And what it contains is, it's written by Moses about 1405 B.C., right before he dies, the second giving of the law. It's Moses' farewell messages, to Israel. It probably takes place, it takes place on the plains of Moab. Now remember, the first time the Israelites went to enter the promised land, they were going through Kadesh Barnea. Now they come over here, and they're on the plains of Moab in this area, and Jericho is right there, and they're going to enter across the Jordan River into Jericho. But right now they're on the plains of Moab, and it's 1 month there, and Moses gives his final messages during this point. The outline of Deuteronomy, Moses, four different parts. Moses speaks about Israel's past history, chapters 1 to 4, the past history of Israel. He gives a summary of that. Then Moses restates the Mosaic Law. The Mosaic Law, the Law of Moses, in chapters 5 to 26, is to read the second giving of the law to this generation, because they weren't there when the law was given the first time. Then in chapters 27 to 30, Moses speaks about Israel's future. He makes some predictions. Israel's future is given in chapters 27 to 30. And then Moses bids farewell in chapters 31 to 34 of the book of Deuteronomy. So that's your outline of Deuteronomy. And let's take a look at this. Okay, first in the first four chapters, Moses speaks about Israel's past history. Chapter 1, he talks about Israel's unbelief at Kadesh Barnea. They were afraid of the giants and they refused to enter into the promised land. Chapters 2 and 3, he talks about the 40 years of wilderness wandering and the things that occurred there. And in chapter 4, Moses warns Israel before they enter Canaan. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I am teaching you to perform in order that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you. You shall not add to the word which I commanded, or which I am commanding you, nor take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command. So he's warning them. Go into the promised land, take it, but obey the law of Moses. Obey the commands that God gave you. Moses restates the Mosaic law in chapters 5 to 26. 5 to 11, Moses gives the Ten Commandments and some moral commands, some other moral commands. But it's very key. Never, I said it before, I'll say it again, never during the Old Testament was anybody saved. Never in the history of mankind was anybody saved through works. And it was always by God's grace. But take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5, is it? Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And what he's basically saying, he's saying you've got to love God with everything you've got, and that is going to cause you to obey the commands of God. In other words, you have to, the personal relationship with the God of the Bible precedes our obedience to the laws of God. You have to keep that in mind. You can't obey God's law without a personal love relationship with the God of the Bible. What people try to do is they try to have a relationship with the law of God, and you'll never obey God's law that way. You've got to have a personal relationship with the lawgiver, and that will enable you to obey God's laws. Yeah.
Another question. When did they switch from the law of tradition to the written tradition?
From oral to written? I think Moses started recording it right away. He had a real solid writing style, so somewhere in his generation this stuff was already... It was already being referred to by the time Joshua came on the scene as the law of Moses and being in written form. So it was written during Moses' lifetime, probably right from the hand of Moses. He had the education that would be able to do it. But probably, you know, even the Ten Commandments were written on tablets of stone immediately. So. I think the writing occurred real quick, and I think the oral tradition with the Jews around the time of Christ, that was the additions they were making to the Old Testament. Their commentaries on the Old Testament was oral tradition, and then they started to write that down years later. But most of the oral tradition, I think now, with a lot of information, the book of Genesis, a lot of that was ancient information that was probably kept on tablets of stone or whatever, or maybe in some writing parchments or whatever, but
the writing predates Moses.
Oh yeah. In fact, the guys that came up with the documentary hypothesis, they assumed no one wrote as early as 1500 B.C. Now we have evidence of writing between common people and business transactions that date back to 3000 B.C. So,
just figured guys were running around on all fours and gears back that time.
Yeah, and I think guys really started writing. I mean, the book of Genesis was written so late, I mean, 2,500 years after God created Adam at least, so that I think guys started writing when their memories started going down the tubes, and that their memories were so much better. Okay, let's see. Ceremonial and civil duties, some of them are mentioned in chapters 12 to 26. Let me see what we got here. Verses 1 to 7 of Deuteronomy chapter 12. These are the statutes and the judgments which you shall carefully observe in the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you to possess as long as you live on the earth. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations whom you shall dispossess serve their gods, and on the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree. You shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars and burn their asherim, that's their wooden symbols of a female deity. Burn their asherim with fire, and you shall cut down the engraved images of their gods, and you shall obliterate their name from that place. And you shall not act like this toward the Lord your God, but you shall seek the Lord at the place which the Lord your God shall choose from all your tribes to establish his name there for his dwelling. And there you shall come. And you shall bring your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the contribution of your hand, your votive offerings, your free will offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and of your flock. Now, what is he saying? He's saying today you're not going to have all these different false idols and stuff that you're going to worship, these altars to false gods, but the day's going to come when I'm going to give you in the land of Israel one place, one center of worship for the true God. What is that? It's a prediction of Jerusalem. Now, then they had the tabernacle at this point, the portable temple. Well, when they enter the promised land, they're going to keep that tabernacle at Shiloh in the land of Israel for years, and it's not till David brings the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem that, and then has the plans to build the temple, and then God says, you're a bloody man, you're a warrior, I'm going to have your son build the temple after you. And then after David, Solomon comes, and then Solomon builds the temple. But that's the fulfillment of that particular passage right there. Anyway, ceremonial and civil duties in chapters 12 to 26. Then Moses speaks about Israel's future in chapters 27 to 30. Chapter 27, Moses says that Israel, God says through Moses, Israel will be cursed if they disobey God. If they disobey God's laws, the nation will be cursed. Look at verse 26 of Deuteronomy 27. And that reads, cursed is he who does not conform the words of this law by doing them. And all the people shall say, amen. You disobey God's laws and God's going to curse the nation. Chapter 28 of Deuteronomy says, but Israel will be blessed if they obey God. Verses 1 and 2. Now it shall be if you diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. Under King David and under King Solomon, you could not beat these guys. They were the strongest nation on earth. America founded itself, based itself upon the laws of God, was obedient to those laws, and what did God do with America? He blessed us above all the nations on earth. Now America looks more like Sodom and Gomorrah than we look like the old prosperous Israel. Verse 2, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you will obey the Lord your God. So chapter 27, Israel will be cursed if they disobey God. Chapter 28, Israel will be blessed if they obey God. Moses predicts Israel's captivity. They'd be taken captive by the Assyrians and the Babylonians, and then their dispersion, and also be taken captive by the Romans, and they're being dispersed all over the earth in chapters 28 and 29. But in chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, Moses predicts that Israel would return to the promised land. Chapters 31 to 34, Moses bids farewell to the people. Due to Moses' sin, he could not enter the promised land. Chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, Joshua is chosen to be the successor of Moses. Chapter 32 records Moses' song. He wrote a song about God's dealings with Israel. Moses' final sermon is mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 33. And then Moses ascends. He goes up Mount Nebo. And in chapter 34, he sees the promised land from there. Moses saw the promised land, but he was not allowed to enter it. And he dies at the age of 120. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 34, the final chapter in the Law of Moses, the fifth of the five books that make up the Pentateuch, the Torah, the Law. And Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 1 to 12, that's a long passage. Well, just look at verse 5. Verses 4 and 5 is on the top of the mountain. The Lord said to him, "This is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there." So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. Verse 9. Now Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the sons of Israel listened to him as the Lord had commanded Moses. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. For all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel. And so Moses led the people out of bondage in Egypt, led them through the wilderness, but then could not enter the promised land. Did Moses ever enter the promised land? The answer is yes. 1,500 years later, or 1,400 years later, in Matthew 17, verses 1 to 3, Moses finally enters the promised land. Look at Matthew 17, verses 1 to 3. And 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and brought them up to a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became as white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with them. And so it took over 1,400 years before Moses finally entered into the promised land, when his God and Savior was standing in the promised land. Moses was able to come from heaven and to be with Jesus for that small amount of time for a conversation with our great God and Savior Jesus Christ in the promised land.